Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast. I'm your host, Chris Ashley, and I'm really excited about today's guest. I was a guest on his podcast, and I loved his story so much. It was so inspirational that I had to have him come on, and lucky for all of us, he agreed. So today I have with me Scott Proposky. He is a former National Geographic and White House photographer. And over the pandemic, he launched his own business, which is helping photographers build their business, helping them out on the business side. So if you're a photographer, you definitely want to jump on this one. He's also the host of the 3 o'clock podcast, of which I was a guest and had a great time. So go give it a listen. And I'm so excited to have you here, Scott. Welcome.
Yeah, no, thanks. Chris Ashley, we were joking about our last podcast we were on, and we said, I just love people with two first names. It was kind of a joke. And you gave me this great story about your name and your background, which I'm sure everybody knows, but I just love the story and the back end stories. And I love talking about stories and storytelling, which is why we both get along so well in our conversations about storytelling. So I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's funny. No one has heard that story on my podcast. So maybe I'll have to break it out on another episode. But just for everyone listening who's like, what is he talking about? Ashley is actually my middle name, and it's an ode to my father, which is why I went with this. But Scott, I'm so excited to have you here. Would you mind telling listeners a little bit about your background? I know I gave a quick bio, but things like National Geographic, White House, that's probably getting people's attention right now.
You know, it does. And when you live it and you're in it, Chris, it's different. You know, when you look at other people, is the grass always greener somewhere else? And you're like, gosh, this would be my dream job. But when you get there, it just feels like everything else. And I more reflected back on it 20 years later. It was 20 years I was in the business and these amazing accounts and just amazing opportunities I've had. And one just rolled into the next one. National Geo landed to Time Inc. Time Inc. landed to Fox News Corp. Fox News Corp. landed to something else. And it was just a snowball effect. And it literally wasn't until 20 years later during the pandemic, I sat down and wrote a book and went, gosh, I got a lot of great stories I can help somebody with. So it kind of happened, you know, like a lot of people who are in businesses, they make it up as they go.
Yeah.
Which is good and bad. Depend upon what you want to grow, but I completely made it up as I went really fast. But the most important thing is I stayed in my same lane. I stayed in the same lane and I stayed consistent with what I wanted to do, which is work with corporate clients and be adventurous and just like think about the impossible. Just I can do it. Think of the impossible.
I love that. And it's so in line with everything that I talk about in my book and on my show that if you can dream it, it can happen, right? Quantum physics even says that every possible future exists out there in a state of rest. You have to choose it. And what's amazing is you chose it and you went for it. So I know you said that one kind of snowballed into the next and it's kind of maybe that like who you know situation. But for all of those people listening that are like, wait, I didn't land National Geographic. How do you even get started with something like that? How did National Geographic, that was the first one, right? Like, how did that come to be?
I called them.
I love that answer.
Many people, and what I found is once I called them that, and I got into what we call that space, right? That there wasn't a lot of competition. So it was actually easier to get than my local little leagues and my local events where there was so many more people. There's a lot more competition. You know, that whole, you know, it was just being commoditized, right? Versus dealing with high level corporate clients. Didn't really even have to send proposals. Okay, we'll do it. It was amazing.
I love that so much. And you have to elaborate on the Little League story a little bit because you told me that before, which is part of the reason why I wanted you on the show. But, you know, people tend to have this thought in their mind that everyone's going after those big dogs, right? Like National Geographic and like the White House. And what is it? What do you think it is? Why why are people going after these smaller fish? Why are people so afraid to go after those bigger ones?
Limited beliefs. Right. I mean, we all have it at some level. But you kind of say, oh, you know, and also the people you surround yourself with. You know, if you're surrounding with yourself and your friends, or, you know, it could be your husband or your wife, and you say, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to call the White House and try to be a photographer, right? I mean, it's reasonable to say that maybe your spouse would say, what are you, crazy? But there is a lot to be said about the people you surround yourself with, because the people I surround myself with are all entrepreneurs, and we just call ourselves a whole bunch of misfits. Because we'll mention an idea and each one of us will say, wow, that's awesome. That's a great idea, right? Versus most people would say, what are you, crazy? It's just the way we think. And I surround myself with just these crazy thinkers that are doing it. It's just, you know, it's bragging. It's only bragging rights till after you do it. And they have bragging rights.
I love that so much because it's all about your mindset. And if you're telling your dreams to someone that's shooting them down, it's going to get into your own head, right? And if you surround yourself with people who are achieving higher things than you, it's going to drive you, right? You're going to move up to their level. Okay, so you called National Geographic. You had this idea. Was there any kind of fear going through your mind? Like, what was going through your head when you made that call? Or were you like, oh, I'm just going to throw it out there and see what happens? Like, what was that process?
There was no fear. It was so, I was at a point in no point of return. Like, why wouldn't they do it? I mean, when I look back, like, I would do a job in New York City for ABC. This is legitimately a real story. I was doing a photography program for ABC, which is part of Disney. And I was taking pictures of Miley Cyrus and Billy Ray Cyrus. Okay. When Miley's 6 years old, 7 years old, it probably wasn't as big as today, right? But still a big job. And so I would wait, be all set up. But Time Inc. was across the street where I was. So I said, you know what? I got an extra hour. Why don't I run across the street to Time Inc., which is where Sports Illustrated is. And let me just stop in and say hi, because I'm not here in the city that often. I leave one venue, jump across the street to Time Inc., walk into Sports Illustrated office and sit down and have a conversation for a few minutes. Hey, I'm in town. I just wanted to say hello. And then, you know, leave there and go back to the, you know, Miley Cyrus and Billy Ray Cyrus photo shoot and pick up where I left off. There was a time where I was like, I'm all set up. I'm not going to leave. Why would I leave? Right? Everything's good. I'm already nervous, right? But it was just so much confidence level that I knew that I might as well take advantage of my time and let me do this to do this and do that. And there was no fear. Fear is the factor, right? Where it didn't matter. It really didn't matter.
Okay. So what got you to that mindset? What got you to that point of no return, as you say? Were you always like that? Were you born like that? Was it instilled in you? What do you think?
Some people would say I just didn't know better. honestly, you don't know what you don't know.
I love that.
You don't know what you don't know. And I didn't know what I didn't know. And this is at the time, that's all I knew. And it just, no other option. It was like, well, if I do this, I got to do that. It wasn't that. It was like, if I can do this, I can do this. If I do that, I can do this.
It's like, and you saw the path open up before you, kind of thing.
Yeah, it was not a, you know, it got to a point where I got comfortable being uncomfortable.
I love that.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's like,
you almost get hooked on that feeling after a while, right? It's like,
oh, yeah. No, it's no, it is an adrenaline. I can't speak with my Boston accent here, but it definitely, it gets in you. And, yeah, just like, you know, news reporters and anchor reporters, and they're live at the scene and, you know, war zones and all sorts of crazy things like that. And it's just in you.
Okay, so I want to go back to that Miley Cyrus and Billy Ray Cyrus story, because you told it to me before, but there was a little bit more to it. There was something that you overheard and then a connection with your own dad. And I'd love for you to share that story with listeners, because I loved it so much.
Yeah. No, you know, again, it wasn't until 20 years later, I realized as I was writing my book, you know, I was sitting down and really hyper-focused and writing my book. And these stories came to me because I didn't really overthink them. Time went on so fast. And when I actually sat down and thought about the stories, and I have an amazing, remarkable ability to remember stories in like massive detail. This is what I do. And it wasn't until very later on that I thought of the story, and I wrote it in my book about when I met with Miley Cyrus and Billy Ray Cyrus. And it was a photo shoot in New York City. And my dad was a photographer, and he was in the retirement age. And I said, "Dad, why don't you come on for a ride with me? I got this little photo shoot to do." And he's like, "Okay, comes for the ride." And and so, you know, we set up. It was no big deal. And we set up for the photo shoot and, you know, just, you know, it's fine. And I was really setting up the cameras and the lights. And my dad kind of walked away and he came back. And he goes, "Hey, Scott." He goes, "You see this microphone here?" And it was like all these diamonds on it and reflect, you know, I don't know, real diamonds or whatever the case may be. You know, this really nice microphone, right? Really, you know, glammed out. And he goes, "Hey, that guy over there said this microphone's going to end up in the Smithsonian." And my dad would roll his eyes like, "Yeah, whatever." And I said, "Dad, who said that to you?" He was, "That guy over there with the long hair. You know, like the mullet. They call that a mullet?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, that's Billy Ray Cyrus." And he goes, "Who?" I said, "Dad, just hang on to the microphone. If he told you don't lose it, just kind of hang on to it right now." He goes, "All right, whatever."
"Don't lose that microphone."
He goes, "Okay, whatever." So it was Billy Ray, it was Miley, my dad was there, and a few other people doing the photo shoot. And during the whole time of the photo shoot, I just couldn't help but overhear Billy Ray Cyrus about how Miley was, that microphone was going to go in the Smithsonian. And she was going to be a rock star. And you could just hear the vibe and the voice and you just hear it. And, you know, it was true. It was believable. There was a point of no return for her. But the environment of being with her dad and this is what's going to happen. We're going to do this. It wasn't a Porsche. Like people want to like, "Son, you got to play baseball because I wanted to play baseball and your kid doesn't want to play baseball," right? And you force the kid to do it. I mean, Miley was a true rock star and she had the support to get to where she wants to be, you know, wherever that may be and her goals. And I just thought it was remarkable. But what I didn't realize is that I was there with, Miley was there with her dad and I was there with my dad. But my dad was there just as much to promote me, just like Miley Cyrus. Because at the time, I was just in my business. I was just getting into these accounts. Didn't land all the, you know, the bigger accounts, the White House, President Obama, and so forth and so on. And it was the point of no return, just like Billy Ray was doing. My dad was doing the same thing. But I only really realized it 20 years later.
I have goosebumps. I love that so much. And I love that you overheard Billy Ray saying, "She's going to be a rock star. This is what she's going to do. This is what she's going to accomplish." Like no doubt in his voice. And can you imagine hearing that as a six-year-old girl? It's like, yeah, I can achieve anything. Like why would I ever doubt this? My dad believes in me, you know?
There was no other option.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't, "Well, no, let me just stay home and I'm going to do..." There was no other option.
Yeah, it's so important the way... I mean, as someone who's pregnant and thinking about children, it's so important the way that we talk to and about our children. Because that voice that people hear, especially before the age of 7, when they're in that theta brainwave state, they're just downloading information, that becomes their inner voice. You know, and I'm sure your dad did the exact same thing for you. So that's such a beautiful story.
Yeah, okay. Speaking to my dad, I was talking to him just yesterday.
Yeah.
And we talk about little, you know, little stories will come up. And I was on the phone with him and he goes, "Scott, you know, you could write a book about all the things you did." I said, "Dad, I did." And I'll tell you why I did it, because all through those years and 20 years of growing up and doing these really, like this, my dad would roll his head. He goes, "Scott, you got to add this to your book one day." And he said that to me for 20 years as well. Whoops. Sorry that. We are, we're testing our camera here and for another project. And I'm trying to set this all up to be camera focused. But he said for years, you have to add that to your book one day. You have to add it to your book one day. So when the time came, I actually already knew I was going to write a book.
Yeah.
So I wrote the book. It was pretty easy to do. But yeah, anyway, so yeah, the power of the environment, the people you surround yourself with, is actually more than knowledge sometimes, more powerful.
It's everything. Yeah. And you made me think about it too. I totally forgot when I was prepping for this episode, all about your podcast. So that's just another example of how you just step outside of your comfort zone. So you have the 3 o'clock podcast. Can you tell people how that came about and what your experience with it has been? Because I love that story too.
Yeah. I call it the 3 o'clock coffee podcast. Got to have the coffee.
Pardon. Yeah. I missed
it. It's like everything, you know, I mean, the coffee to me is like, I started that 10 years ago.
Wow.
And I didn't really call it a podcast then, but what I would actually do is go out and meet people at 3 o'clock. And how it all really happened was my childhood friend, Bobby, we shared an office together as we were growing the business. And Bobby ended up with pancreatic cancer. And it was fast. But all during that time, as we were in startup in the office, we were like two little girls, as we said, talking, didn't get anything from our perspective. And we said, you know, Scott, we got to stop talking to each other because we're not getting anything done. And so he says, how about we just stop at 3 o'clock? We'll just meet up and we'll have a cup of coffee and you know, you tell me what's going on with your deals, and I'll tell you what's going on my deals. And we did it for many years. And we just stopped for 3 o'clock and have coffee. But after Bob passed, 3 o'clock came, and there was just nobody to talk to. And it was only him and I in the office. And so I, you know, Facebook was just starting out at the time, and I would put it on social media and say, hey, anybody want to meet me for 3 o'clock coffee at the, you know, local cafe or Starbucks where I was at, and people would show up.
That's cool.
Just different people. And they went on, and you know, every once in a while, every week I'd meet somebody. But then I said, you know what? Let's step this up a little bit. I want to really meet some not that my friends and the local people were interested, but I wanted to meet some really big CEOs and understand what they think and how they talk. So I reached out to some like really big CEOs, $50 million, $100 million CEOs, big companies. And I'd call them up and say, hey, Ed, you know, my name is Scott and so forth. I just want to know, would you meet me for coffee at 3 o'clock? And is Thursday or Friday open for you? Like, yeah, okay, Thursday. I'll let my assistant call you, set it all up. I'm like, okay. And then I would drive like 7 hours or 8 hours in bed somewhere in New Jersey or somewhere and just sit down and have coffee with them. Didn't tell him anything, just really to be a friend. And what I found was, again, nobody does this.
Yeah.
And so when you sit down with a $100 million CEO and you just worth comment, I'm not selling anything. I just want to, hey, I want to have a conversation and, you know, and you sit down and you just want to be a friend. People of a very large company, unfortunately, don't have a lot of friends.
Yeah, it's lonely at the top, right?
You know, because you really can't talk to a lot of coworkers. It's all business, business, business. I don't know anybody in the business. I don't know anybody, right? So it becomes more of a friendship really fast. And still today, a lot of those people that I met over the years are still my friends. Of these very, very large companies. It's just really remarkable, the people that I've met. And it goes back to the zero competition, because nobody's really being genuine enough to say, hey, I just want to sit down and have a cup of coffee with you and see how you started the business.
Well, I'm sure too that when people do actually reach out, they're pitching something. right? Mm-hmm. They're not just like, hey, let's just you know, shoot the shit and just tell me about your life, you know, tell me your story. And they just probably don't see these people as human beings and to some extent, right? Because when someone's like that successful, it's almost like you put them on another level and you forget that they're just a person.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's how I landed the Boston Celtics and the New England Patriots.
Really? Tell me that story.
Yeah. So I was dealing with, early on, I wanted, you know, the Celtics were looking for photographers and do events. So I knew the intern at the time, a few years back, and he got a promotion. And so I reached out to him. I'm like, hey, Tristan, I want to know if you want to go to lunch. We'll go across the street to the Fours. It's a big sports place in Boston, the Fours, you know? Mm-hmm. And the whole menu is named after all the sports players, Bobby Orr, Larry Bird. And so it was a popular place. And he goes, yeah, okay, sure. Mm-hmm. Go down to Boston. And met him, and he's at the door. And, hey, gee, thanks for meeting with me. He sat down. It was very standoffish. And we sat down, and I just asked him, you know, where do you live? Where do you go to college? What's going on? What's up? And, stepped on that, you know, I'd ask some questions. You talk the whole time, about an hour and a half. Didn't really say that much.
Yeah.
I just asked a bunch of good questions. And just before we finished, you know, lunch, and he goes, you know, Scott, I'm buying dinner. I'm buying, it was actually ended up dinner. We stayed so long. He goes, I'm buying. And, you didn't mention anything about wanting tickets. How can I get my family and friends into the games and favors? And you didn't even mention the Celtics or any player. He goes, why? I said, I wanted to meet with you, just have a conversation. He goes, didn't you want the business, the photography? I said, yeah, you know what I do. If you want to do it, that's fine. We could have that conversation. And he goes, no. But now on, you're my guy, and this is what we're doing. We'll go with you. 7 years later, we went on for 7 years, and Celtics were a great client, and it went on for quite a bit, which actually led to the Bruins and the Patriots, and because they're like, hey, if he's over the Celtics, what are they doing over there? We want him at the Bruins. So it became the snowball effect, right? And just honestly, just because I was having a conversation with somebody.
That's amazing. I don't know if you've ever read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, but one of the things they say is just, or Dale Carnegie says, is just ask questions. Be interested in the other person's life, because so many people come into a conversation with their own agenda, talking about themselves. People love to talk about themselves, right? And so many people aren't asked about themselves. And that comes in, like, I'm not saying that in a manipulative way, like genuinely be interested in other people's stories because they're fascinating. But the fact that you were just so genuinely interested and came from such a down-to-earth place, that's probably so refreshing for so many people. Okay, so you just looked up these big companies, found the phone number, called the CEO. That's what happened?
Yeah.
I love that so much.
Yeah, I'm actually, I was watching television one day, and my dad actually called me again. He said, hey, did you watching Shark Tank? I said, let me say that with a really strong Boston accent. Hey, Scott, you watching Shark Tank? You know? And I said, no, Dad, I'm not. You know, he goes, oh, I think you should put it on. I'm like, okay. So I put it on. And there was an episode where this guy, his name's Mitch Allen, he was on the show, and he was pitching HireSanta.com to
form pitching a, what?
Yeah, I know. Santa Claus.
Santa Claus.
Santa Claus. So okay. HireSanta.com.
HireSanta.
HireSanta.com. Happy to promote it. And that's the name of the company, HireSanta.com. Okay. So he was pitching the business to Bob Cochran to buy the business, you know, percentage, and, you know, jump in and help out, right? And to build the business to be the biggest, you know, employment agency, I guess you could say, for Santa Claus.
Yeah.
So if you need a Santa Claus anywhere in the country today, you go to HireSanta.com and you can find a Santa Claus.
It's like an agency. It's like an acting agency, but for stand-ups. Okay.
Yeah. So I see him on Shark Tank, and I was in a coaching program. I knew some people, and I searched for his number, and I got, I talked to somebody. I'm like, listen, I really want to talk to Mitch. Yeah, can you pass my name around? Whoops. Go back to this. I'm a photographer that can't keep the camera on.
Well, you're not a videographer, so it's okay.
Well, no, I'm practicing with this camera here, and I'm trying to get it all working. Anyways, I'm working on another project, holding on the story. And so all of a sudden, I get a text like a week later and said, hey, Scott, I heard you were looking for me. And I'm like, Mitch? Mitch Allen? He goes, yeah. Yeah, I heard you do. I'm like, yeah, hey, Mitch, how are you? I'm like, Mitch, I tell you what, I know you're a busy guy. How about, can we meet for coffee this week? He goes, yeah, how about Thursday? Okay, Thursday at 3 o'clock? Absolutely. Okay, I'll see you Thursday at 3 o'clock. Maybe at the office. Nope, I know where you are. I'll find you. Okay, Scott. Now, I'm in Boston. He's in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, no.
So I jump on a plane that morning, get down there. I fly down to Dallas, and I get an Uber, and I show up at his office. And I got not luggage, but I got a bag, right? And I walk into his office, and I'm like, Mitch, he goes, Scott, glad you make it. So he sits down for a few minutes, and obviously my strong Boston accent is extremely strong when you're in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
And he looks around, and he sees my bag, and, you know, probably a little disheveled jumping off the plane. He goes, did you just come here from Boston right now for coffee? Like, you just got here from Boston right now. Yeah, it's only a 3-hour flight. He goes, for coffee. I said, yeah. He goes, I'll tell you what, I got to pick up my kids up at soccer. How about, I know where you're staying, I'm going to bring my kids to soccer. Let's go out to a really great dinner. Let's have dinner together.
Yeah.
Like, great. So we went to dinner, and we had a great dinner, and we had great conversations, and it was many years ago, and I'm still friends with Mitch. I can actually send him a text right now. He'll get back to me. And we've had a lot of great conversations. Again, I'm a photographer. I did a lot of business in photography with Santa Claus, but I never asked him for business or vice versa. We just have conversations, and that was it, you know. But it was really great to know all the insides of Shark Tank and how he got on there, and, you know, just different thing. And it was, you know, again, it was a friend that could actually kind of have a conversation with.
I love it. And I was just thinking as you were talking about this, you know, they say one of the biggest markers of longevity is having really sincere friendships in your life. And there's not that many people that you can just call on that just don't want anything from you, you know, that just genuinely, I just love what you do so much.
I think it's more, you know, I started this many years ago, and I kind of grew into it as I just do it and call people. But when I do it now and I reach out to somebody, it's almost over the top because nobody does it. And it looks like you're looking for something. Yeah. So it's so obvious that people just stop and say, what? I'm like, no. And so, yeah, it's very obvious today. When I go out and reach somebody or have a conversation, sometimes it's a little bit more difficult than it was even 5 years ago. But right now, if anybody's listening, I'm trying to get a hold of I'm trying to get a hold of Tom Anderson.
Who's Tom Anderson?
I was waiting for you to ask.
Yeah.
Do you remember MySpace?
Oh yeah, is it MySpace Tom?
MySpace Tom.
I follow him on Instagram. He has an Instagram.
Yeah, and so. So we haven't had this conversation yet. So you follow him on Instagram. What does Tom Anderson do for a living?
I have no idea. I think he posts like travel photos every once in a while. I have no idea what he does.
He's a professional photographer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
So he is a guy that he was a founder of MySpace. And by the time I was actually working at MySpace during that whole time. Okay. And,
but you were working at MySpace?
Yeah.
Doing what?
A photographer.
Okay. Cool.
So I was working with, actually, I was working at Fox News Corp.
Okay.
And then Fox News Corp purchased MySpace.
MySpace. Okay.
So I kind of got blended in there doing some work. So I ended up finding myself in Los Angeles doing some photo works for MySpace at the time when this whole transaction happened. And whole nother story how I met a lot of the people there. But what happened was, so you have this individual, MySpace, which is the biggest company sold, $248 million.
Wow.
Okay. By the way, Tom has said this publicly, but he dropped out of school at sixth grade.
Sixth grade.
Wow. Yeah. He did end up going back to college and got a master's and MBA and so forth. Had the money afterwards. But he left to become a photographer.
Wow. That's really cool. And did he found MySpace, or was he just kind of the face of MySpace?
No, it was him and a few other people. He was one of the founders. And they actually had the website MySpace. They had it, and then they had to rebuy it back for like 10 bucks or something because they lost the website. And it was actually bought for another project they were doing. And they bought it for a few bucks. And and then Fox News Corp purchased them for $248 million.
Wow.
And Tom has never gone back into corporate America.
Good for him.
And he left, and when he left there, he worked for a little bit for MySpace. Obviously, an individual like that cannot work for Fox News Corp in that culture of a company as an entrepreneur. It's a known true fact. And he didn't, and he left and traveled the world and became a photographer.
That's amazing. So he actually just used that to follow his lifelong dream that he had since sixth grade.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, to be a photographer. Really beautiful.
I love it. Good for him. Well, I hope someone out here listening can help connect Scott and Tom.
I definitely want to. I'm writing a book called Keep Thinking Outside the Box. Keep Thinking Outside the Box. And here's an individual that he was thinking outside the box, right? And so I think he would be a great person as a photographer, as my field and my history, to interview such an individual who created the social media of the world. And it was actually the first time digital cameras were out that we could actually share photographs with MySpace. So it was a really pinnacle point and change in time in history. And then he would actually end up being a photographer. Seems kind of.
I love it. That's really cool. Well, I hope you get that connection. I'm sure you will. You have a way of making things happen. Okay. So you kind of glazed over it earlier, but I want to circle back. So, you know, now we know all the amazing clients that you've had, big, big clients, and you were trying to get to be a photographer in your local little league team and you couldn't do it. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So, when I first started doing a lot of photography, I would do school photographs, school pictures. And at the time, you know, even still today, school pictures, they were really expensive for a lot of kids, for parents, and just like, they were a lot of money. And so I ended up going to Lawrence Mass, where I grew up, in a town, inner city school. And I said, you know what? How about we offer school photographs at affordable prices? Mm-hmm. And we were selling school pictures for like $10.
Wow.
Which is, it's still wow, right? And so what I found out was that historically in a inner city, low, you know, not very high income level town, is that they actually will purchase a lot more photos historically. They don't have, you know, it's just a privilege, and it's like a great, you know, something they can get anywhere else. And sales skyrocketed just offering a minimum $10 package than everybody else. And everybody else was charging $50 and $60. So when I would go down to the local little leagues, it was down a price, and it was always about price, right? It's always about price, right? So, I mean, I was the low, it was $10, and everybody else was $40 and $50. And I still couldn't land the jobs. I'm like, why can't I get these jobs? You know, I think I have it in my schedule. I just came back from traveling with National Geo or, Sports Illustrated. I was in a job. And people knew who I was, but I didn't play the card. No, that wasn't the point. Is that I really wanted to do school pictures and build a business in my local neighborhood, doing photography, school pictures, and local. I could not get the job.
And you couldn't get the job because there was so much competition for it.
There was just so much competition. You know, who knew who, and Sally Sue, and so forth and so on. And I actually told Sports Illustrated that. I'm like, it's amazing that I'm here with Sports Illustrated because I can't even land my local little league. I was like, what?
I bet that cracked them up.
Yeah, like, what? What are you talking about? I'm like, I cannot get my local little league. And I still didn't. I never got it. I didn't get it. I never got it.
You never got it.
Yeah, no.
Well, there's still time.
Yeah, it's not. But yeah, I mean, again, it goes back to competition and you know, everybody's chasing the same, thing.
Do you think it has to do with people thinking that they're only worthy of getting those small fish and not going after the big catches? You think it's like a self-worth kind of thing?
Oh, completely. And I don't think the mindset actually says it that way in your mind, sure. But it's almost like, I can never do that.
Like the, it's like mind, your brain talks you out of it.
Yeah, right? You don't even go there. Most people don't even go there.
Right. Because you tell yourself stories like, oh, they probably have so many people and it's all about who you know. And, you know, you need
a portfolio. Yeah, it's the stories we tell ourselves, right?
Right.
I tell people that all the time. It's the stories you tell yourself.
Yeah. And most of the stories are just complete BS, right? Belief system.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You know, you know, you're healthy, deserve level, right?
So what would you say to people who are afraid to leave their comfort zone, who want to do these things that you do, but have that fear factor stopping them? What's your advice?
Yeah. So it's a good question because, you know, what really is the fear? Is it because they have three kids and they're, you know, and it's a big change and they're there for their family and their kids? You know, I believe you don't have to do it all the time, full time and go all in, but to break it down and just do a little bit, right? It's not, we get, I was talking to somebody earlier, it's analysis by paralysis.
Mm.
We overthink it. Like, oh, if I did that, am I going to do this? And that, oh man, I don't know if I could do that. Just stop with one call. Don't leave your full-time job. Don't put your house on the market to buy all this gear. It's not about the gear. It really just starts with one phone call and one job.
Yeah.
And don't go, that's it. Don't think about anything else.
Yeah. I love that. Never underestimate the power of a small step, right?
Yeah. Tiny habits. Yeah.
And you really do miss 100% of the shots you don't take. It's all up to you. A mentor told me a long time ago, say yes until you have a really good reason to say no. And I've just lived by that. You know, anytime an opportunity comes, but sometimes you have to go out and make your own opportunities like you had to, and like you're saying, so.
Yeah. I really, again, not knowing, again, you don't know what you don't know. Okay. And going into this, I didn't know what I didn't know. And I learned along the way, which is why I like writing the books and talking to people. Because there is a lot of information on the internet and YouTube videos, and there's a lot of false information too, you know, and they want to, hey, you can do it too, sell you this and buy this and, you know, and all that good stuff. And it's really hard to understand what's real and what's not, You know, from sales to buying stuff, to listening to things and seeing people on the internet and social media and TikTok, you know, well, I saw it on TikTok. It must be true. I think people get, you know, I don't think they're ever fully grasping that, but learn from somebody that's already been there, not somebody that wants to be there, but really somebody who's been there. If they haven't been there, just enjoy the conversation.
Yeah.
Until they've been there. I mean, that's the person you want to talk to. Somebody that's been there.
That's such beautiful advice. And it just goes back to your idea of surround yourself with people who already have what you want, who are already successful, who are have that mindset, right? Who are driven. Because those are the people you come from.
You know what? I wasn't a book reader growing up. And I was probably about the last person in high school that would ever think that I'd read a few books. The last person. seriously. But what I never did my homework. I never read a book. Growing up, I didn't. And now I'm writing books, and people don't believe I write the books. But I can hyper focus on it. But what I really found was you can find out most CEOs and big companies out there have a book out.
Yeah.
You know, they either did it for marketing reasons or they had a, you know, somebody wrote it for them. It doesn't matter, right? It's their story. And there is so much free information by just picking up a book. You could eliminate, Harvard University and business and read 10 top textbooks on CEOs and some of the business, how they built it. It's amazing. Absolutely, truly amazing. The information that's out there.
I love that advice. And I can't remember who said, I feel like Alex Hormozi or someone said something similar.
Oh, yeah, I know Alex.
Like, yeah, you know him personally?
Yeah.
Of course you do. Yeah. but I think it was him that said something like, you know, every time, you know, these people are giving you the best information, the best advice they can in a couple hundred pages. Like, why wouldn't you take that? It's just like their best free advice. So yeah, I agree. As a book nerd, I totally agree. And I'm actually reading one of Alex's books right now. So awesome.
Yeah. I met so many people. I went to Strategic Coach, a coaching program in Toronto, Canada, Dan Sullivan, founder of the company and so forth. In that program, it's an amazing, great program for, growing entrepreneurs that want to grow their business. And I spent 8 years there and I met some amazing people, coming in the door all the way up. And they, people you see all the time that you would go, you just wouldn't believe it. it's really amazing. One of my really good friends, Dr. Benjamin Hardy. Ben Hardy wrote many different books and so forth. And a good friend of mine, I could pick up the phone, call him. And, you know, we met 7, 8 years ago, coach. And most people, you know, it's just, it's remarkable to see people that you knew and that just grow so fast.
Yeah, especially when you're on that journey with them and then you get to celebrate all their wins with them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's very cool.
Yeah. Coaching. Yeah. Okay. Advice for listeners, read books. Join a coaching program, get a mentor that's already done it, right? These are just golden nuggets. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Matter of fact, as I was sitting here, my text went off, and one of my mentors, I haven't talked to him about 4 or 5 years, I've been thinking about him a lot, just sent me a text. I'm like, huh, did he know I was on? So, yeah, I mean, you know, I had one growing up for many years, and Graham's been a good friend of mine. And if it wasn't for people like that, I don't really think small business would be advanced that much. It's amazing how many CEOs were. I actually just called in. I'm writing another book called Keep Thinking Outside the Box. Reached out to a $100 million CEO running the business. And people told me I was crazy. Like, he's not going to help you. What is he going to help you for? And I called him and got him on a call. Fast friends. We have a 1-hour call every month. And he's helped me on some inside information how to, you know, about the book and a man and a lot of its content. In the book, he's passionate about helping entrepreneurs and business people, and it's a good collaboration. So I'm looking to launch that in 2024. It's fun in the middle of it all right now, but
that's awesome. I can't wait to read it. What's your book called that's out right now, by the way?
Yeah. So, it's called Camera Focus.
Okay.
Camera Focus.
And it's got all your amazing stories.
It's, you know, I really try not to, it's not about me. It's great storytelling is about the guy that tells the story, right? You know, there's usually a villain and a hero, right? Usually a villain and it's a good story. But I'm just a guy telling the story. I'm a guy telling the story. And that's how I like to do it. Yeah, maybe it was stories that I witnessed or I can talk about. But when I talk about Miley Cyrus and Billy Ray Cyrus, about the confidence level that she had to help her grow and be in that environment, that story's not about me.
Yeah.
Right. I'm making a point of somebody that people can relate to. I just happen to be there. And, you know, conversations like being with Michael Jackson and my experience of being with Michael Jackson or, you know, work with the Harry Potter premiere and conversations I had with Robin Williams. I mean, I'm really, you know, I was really blessed to really have these great conversations with these amazing people. And I just want to share some of these stories, these one little one-liners that really, hey, if I can help one person, this story that is memorable, because people remember stories.
Yeah.
And if it's memorable, then they'll remember it. And if they can have a takeaway from that story, great.
Especially from beloved people like Robin Williams, I'm sure.
Yeah, that was, yeah, that was, I felt that one when all that went down, what happened. And, you know, he got sick, and amazing individual. And yeah, just really funny conversations I had with him.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to read the book. I'm going to have to buy a copy. So Scott, I loved having you on. Thank you so much. Can you tell people how they can get in touch with you, how they can find you, if they want to meet you for coffee, how did they get in touch with you?
Yeah. Anytime you're in the Boston area, I'll buy coffee, reach out to me. But it's really simple. It's my first name and last name. It's Scott Perpot. Whoops. Hold on. The cameras went out. We went to commercial break. I just set this new setup in the studio here, so I'm trying to figure it out.
You're all good. Don't worry about it.
ScottPerpotsky.com. I keep it really simple. ScottPerpotsky.com. You know, go to the website and you can download some of my free books that are there. And yeah, just have a conversation. Maybe know somebody that I could have a conversation about. With. By the way, camera focus is not really about photography. Mm. So camera focus is all about ADHD.
Interesting.
And how to focus. And somebody that has ADHD that can find their superpowers. And for me, it was the camera. Sky's the limit. So for me, it was the camera. I could focus on the camera. Nothing else mattered. And I could be hyper-focused about the camera. And I can really focus on what I was doing. So if you could find something that you can get hyper-focus on, you have ADHD, you do, you don't. The point of the matter is, if you are so into it, a point of no return, right? And this is what you want to do, and you can be hyper-focused on it. Use your ADHD as a superpower. Mm. Not as an excuse. People say, how'd you write a book, Scott? You have ADHD. How can you focus? Because I love the stories I'm telling. It's easy to do.
I love that piece of advice. And I feel like that can go for so many things. So many of these things that we tell ourselves that are detrimental or are false or that's wrong with us can actually be our greatest assets, right? Can be the biggest thing we have going for us. It's just that shift in perspective. Yeah. And find what 100%. You love and get in that flow state in the present moment. I love it. Yeah. Any last thoughts for anyone, or?
Find your superpower. Yeah. Find your superpower. Everybody has it.
Yep. Well, Scott, I really loved having you on. Thank you so much. I was really excited for this conversation, and it exceeded my expectations. So thank you. For everyone else,
thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. For everyone else, please like, subscribe, follow, share, so we can keep spreading the good word, keep inspiring people. Follow me. I'm at Change Your Mind with Chris on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, of course, Facebook, podcast. I'm everywhere. And check out my book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. And thank you all so much. I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day. See you next time.